Hello and welcome to another edition of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast. I'm Robert Dutt, editor of ChannelBuzz.ca, and as always, your host for these proceedings. We've got two great interviews for you on today's edition of the show. First, we'll be joined by Judy Burns, account manager for the Pro AV channel at Epson Canada, who'll discuss Epson's Brightlink Pro interactive projectors. Initially a big idea in the education vertical, Epson's now seeing interactive and collaborative projectors moving across the business world, and Judy will discuss what's driving that, who's selling the company's Brightlink Pro projectors today, and where she sees additional opportunity in the marketplace, as well as discussing a couple of current promos designed to help partners introduce the technology to new customers. From there, we'll be joined by Marco LaVecchia, Vice President of the Americas at AVG Business. I caught Marco presenting to a group of Toronto area MSPs last week and found the discussion quite thought-provoking, so I asked Marco to join us, take us through some of the things he's seeing the managed services market, particularly around penetration rates, mistakes solution providers make when moving to recurring revenue models, and what AVG is doing to help solution providers make that transition themselves. All this and more in this edition of the podcast, so let's get right into it. Joining us now is Judy Burns, account manager for the Pro AV channel at Epson Canada. Judy, thanks for taking the time.
Pleasure, Robert. Thank you.
Sort of a new category and sort of a familiar category with a new product called the Brightlink Pro, marrying kind of the concept of the projector with whiteboarding and presentation. Can you tell us a little bit more about Brightlink Pro?
Sure. The collaborating in the classroom and interacting in the classroom or the boardroom has been around for a while through a board technology, an interactive board technology. And about 4 years ago, Epson introduced the Brightlink and the Brightlink Pro as about 2 years ago. And this is a solution that allows you to interact on any hard surface.
Okay. So, Typically, what are folks using this for? What's the use case?
We're seeing the Brightlinks being used in a lot of classrooms, whether that is K-12 or higher ed. And with the introduction of the Brightlink Pro, we are starting to see this product being used by government and also in corporate environment.
Okay, what is it about the Pro that kind of puts it into that? That government, corporate, enterprise kind of environment that maybe didn't make that this wasn't going into in the past.
We are seeing the Brightlink Pro being used in higher education, and we're also seeing it being used particularly in corporate. We're seeing the need in corporate for users who have been drawing on their dry erase board, taking pictures of it with their devices and sending that along to people who've, let's say, missed the meeting, for example. So now to be able to walk into a room with no external device connected, turn on your digital whiteboard and be able to print, save, and email it from that digital whiteboard is a feature that we're seeing a lot of need for in the corporate market.
And it's accessible for those who are part of the meeting. You mentioned the use case for those who missed the meeting and sharing that way. But it's also accessible for those who are included in the meeting but not necessarily in the same room as the meeting, yes?
Absolutely. If you have people set up on the network, they can either through another Brightlink Pro collaborate with that Brightlink Pro, or from their own device, all they need to do is go find a browser, and they're able to then collaborate with the work that you're doing on the Brightlink in your office.
All right. So obviously, education is the big vertical for these kinds of products. But within that enterprise market, are any particular verticals you're seeing momentum in?
We are starting to see a lot of technology companies adopt this because they are technology companies and they probably spend a lot of time interacting, collaborating, and understanding technology. We are seeing the product being embraced by a lot of technology companies. We are seeing it go into healthcare and some financial institutions.
Okay, great. It's interesting because it's kind of a Pro AV sale. It's kind of a bit of an IT sale with the connectivity and that kind of thing. Who are you finding are the solution providers, the partners who are typically bringing Brightlink Pro to market, installing it on behalf of their customers and that kind of thing?
We're seeing a number of different solution providers find success with this product. Mm-hmm. The solution providers that are being most successful with the product are the ones that first understand the customer's needs. What is their current setup? What is their level of familiarity with using Interactive and understanding how they want to use it? The solution providers that are also finding success are the ones who are asking the right questions. What device do you want to use when you collaborate? Do you want to use your Apple product? Do you want to use your Android, or will you be working within the network? So having a network familiarity, whether it's a network administrator on staff or someone who understands connectivity and the network, that seems to be a really great asset for them.
All right. Collaboration is a bit of a hot spot in a lot of the channel. When you talk about the ability to do some of the collaboration, there's the in-product apps, but are you also able to connect outwards to video conferencing systems and that kind of thing?
Absolutely, we are. Because the projector has dual HDMI, mm-hmm. if you've got a video conference system already or you're planning to get one, then all you need to do is plug your video conference system into the HDMI port and away you go. It's really quite simple.
So basically an add-on for any VAR that's selling these kinds of collaboration solutions.
For sure.
All right. You touched on kind of some of the things that successful partners are doing. Any other tips or you know, sort of general advice that solution providers need to effectively sell Brightlink Pro into their customer base?
Sure. On top of understanding what your customer needs mm-hmm. when you go about selling a Brightlink Pro is being able to do a proper installation and be able to provide post-sales training. Talking about installation, the Brightlink Pro is not a difficult product to install. However, there is definitely a right way to install the Brightlink Pro, particularly as we have moved forward now. Originally we had pen touch. Now we've moved to finger touch, and finger touch is it's very important that the surface that they are mounting it on and the way that they install it is done correctly. Because if it's not done correctly, then you've just bought yourself a large screen projector rather than an interactive projector. So, like I said, not a difficult thing to do to install the Brightlink Pro, but if it's not done properly, then you will struggle with using finger touch.
Okay.
The other thing is training. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, to purchase a Brightlink Pro and have it installed and then not have someone come in and do post-sales training, it's a very intuitive product. It's not difficult to use, but a basic sort of collaboration 101 is a nice to have after the sale mm-hmm. so that you're using it for all the functionality that has, whether that's the interactive tools, whether that's being able to collaborate between Brightlink Pros, be able to collaborate from the meeting room that you're in up to the Brightlink Pro. Important that all of the really cool features are being used.
Gotcha. All right. Along with installation and training, any other particular services that you find partners are wrapping around as far as integration or design, those kinds of things?
Well, we touched lightly on video conferencing, and I do think that is a nice add-on, being able to have a 100-inch diagonal screen when you're doing video conferencing is a lot different than having, let's say, a flat panel, which is maybe 60 inches. You know, the ability to see people almost real size and have your content on the other side is really a bonus. So a nice add-on for the Brightlink Pro is definitely video conferencing.
So getting towards that kind of room-based collaboration experience at a significantly reduced price point and presumably complexity.
Exactly.
Okay. Where are we at in terms of share of spend between kind of traditional projectors and interactive? And do you see a move of more of the market towards interactive in addition to, you know, traditional projecting functionality?
We are absolutely seeing a shift to collaborating and interactive projectors. Mm-hmm. We, in education in particular, very few classrooms are not either buying or considering the purchase of an interactive projector. Chalkboards, kind of, you know, going the way of the dinosaur, and to be able to have not only a large image at the front of the classroom to run whether it's videos or your Excel or whatever you're teaching on, but to also be able to have the students come up to the board and interact is a huge plus for the classroom. So we're seeing adoption rates in education are significant, and we are starting to see people want to collaborate in offices. Think of the total cost of ownership when you buy a Brightlink Pro. Now you're collaborating amongst offices. You're also, if you're plugging in video conference to it, then you no longer have the requirement of travel as much.
All right. So you're telling me that there's going to be a generation of students sooner rather than later who just won't get the term fingernails down the chalkboard.
Exactly. Right. Absolutely.
That's at once extremely heartening and somewhat disappointing on another level.
Yeah, for sure. They'll find something else to complain about, I'm sure, but it won't be fingernails on the chalkboard.
No doubt. Brilliant. You spoke to TCO there to begin with, and I understand that through the end of the month you guys are running a bit of a promo, something that can help VARs probably open some doors and get into some new accounts.
Absolutely. We are running a promotion right now, and it is called First Time Buyer. And so what it allows us to do is provide a 50% off discount mm-hmm. to a first time buyer. So what that does is allows the user at a very, very good cost to bring one into their office or into their boardroom, classroom, what have you, and try it out. And then if they like it, then you know, there's been very little risk in trying a new product, and we have since launched a second time buyer promotion. So the first time buyer, like I said, is 50% off. That's one unit, one location. Mm-hmm. But once you've decided that you like it, the next purchase is 20% off. So we've made it very easy to get this technology into the user's hands.
And I'd have to imagine there, you know, with that, especially with that second time buyer promo in place, this has got to be one of those, you know, kind of network effects where the more you get going in the organization, the greater value you get out of each individual node.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, once you've got it in one boardroom or one classroom, it's just natural. You know, when someone starts using that same boardroom all the time, the boardroom is always booked, it's time to get a second one.
Right on. So if I'm a VAR who has not been working with Epson to date but interested in Brightlink Pro, how do I get involved? What's the process for me to find out more, to get involved and perhaps to start selling if I've got the right opportunities with my customers?
My suggestion would be at the start is to go onto our website at www.epson.ca. We have a couple of links. One of them is www.epson.ca/brightlinkpro, and then there's another one called Brightlink Pro Training Videos. And the ability to use the Brightlink Pro, there's a fantastic video on how to use it, and then there's a lot of videos on how to install, how to use different functions. So I would say to anyone interested is go take a look at our website and, you know, look at some of the videos and understand what you're getting into. And, you know, then you can take it from there.
All right. Are these open distribution products, or do I have to be appropriately authorized and or certified before I get access?
The Brightlink Pro is currently available through our distributors, and we would welcome the opportunity to work with resellers who are interested in learning how to install, interested in learning how to train on the product. That is really the best way to go about selling this product, is to understand the install, the training, and working with the distributors and getting that information.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much. Appreciate your taking the time, Judy.
My pleasure, Robert. Thank you.
All right, joining us now is Marco Lavecchia, Vice President for the Americas at AVG Technologies. Marco, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
I had the chance to see Marco present to a group of MSPs and would-be MSPs early last week, and wanted to follow up on some of the things he was talking about there here for the podcast. Marco, in the presentation last week, you talked about how solution providers are making a big mistake in following sort of their peers' paths, I guess, blindly towards managed services. Can you sort of elaborate on that and why you feel that's an error that solution providers make when moving towards managed services?
Sure, absolutely. when we take a look at the industry and we take a look at the marketplace, right now, right across North America, you probably have anywhere between about 20 to about 25% of the market space that has made the transition into managed services. But we've been talking about this for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And so you have a lot of companies that are utilizing, you know, maybe their second or third existing platform to try and deliver services to their customers. And you've had some great companies that have done exceptionally well, and then you've had some other companies that have not been successful. And a lot of the times, though, we tend to see as we talk to these companies, they try and replicate a lot of things that different service providers are doing in different marketplaces. And they may even be trying to replicate pricing models and strategies. And what we try and educate the space to do is really kind of develop your own type of strategy in terms of what your business is about, right? And articulate and bring value that you as a business have been delivering for years to your customers. You just might be doing it in a different kind of way. And by leveraging a remote monitoring and management platform, that's kind of what you're utilizing behind the scenes, but how you deliver services and your value proposition has to be unique to you. And we've seen a lot of service providers just over the years just try and emulate and copy different service providers. They may run into somebody at an event in Los Angeles. They may be, for instance, located in Memphis, Tennessee or in Toronto. And, you know, they're asking them, hey, listen, what are the types of products and services you sell? What do you sell them for? What does the market bear? And then they try and replicate it in their own marketplace, and it doesn't work. And it's important to know, one, what your market can bear, right, going rates. But also understand that, for instance, you as a business and how you deliver services to your customers, either your cost might be higher or lower than somebody that you might be talking to. So you either might be leaving money on the table, or you may actually may be cutting yourself short. And so that's why, like, we feel that when partners work with us, one of the things that we do is we try and customize pricing models, strategies, service level agreements, and the programs that they offer their customers. They really have to be in line with what their business is, and we really try and customize them for each and every one of our partners.
And I imagine it can depend a fair bit, too, also based on level of skills and level of competition in a market.
Absolutely, right? And there are sometimes certain types of models and programs that maybe a service provider cannot deliver on. And that is another mistake, right, where they try and include things into their programs. Either they're not familiar with, they don't have the technical expertise, and they just kind of bring themselves down a slippery slope in terms of how they support their customers. And then at the end of the day, it's the end user customer that's not really happy with the service provider.
Gotcha. All right. You touched a little bit on kind of helping MSPs craft their SLAs, craft their product offerings and price points. What do you see as AVG's role in helping solution providers through their journey toward managed services?
Yeah, I think it's actually, now we've looked at it as a kind of two-pronged approach. When we first really kind of jumped into the remote monitoring and management space, we felt that it was really important that we educated service providers on developing, for instance, their pricing models and what to include in programs. Now what we've done is we've struck a partnership with Marketopia in the industry and one of the industry's leading evangelists, Terry Hayden, that does a fantastic job in terms of helping MSPs go out and sell and market what their programs are. Mm-hmm. And so when service providers are looking at AVG now, we feel like we have this two-pronged approach where not only are we going to kind of support you and teach you how to do all of these things, we're also going to have programs in terms of how to help you go out and sell and develop marketing strategies and develop funnels, sales funnels, which is what we know in our industry is really difficult for service providers to do because, you know, it's not the natural transition of what their business is all about, right? They're more technology evangelists, really kind of focused on IT, but really kind of developing a sales funnel and how to go out and market it and how many leads and opportunities you should be tracking on a monthly basis and how to close those opportunities. That's kind of the new evolution in terms of what we've brought to our partnership within our channel.
And it makes a lot of sense because, you know, solution providers in general, managed services providers in particular, I would say there are a few of them that are, you know, as you say, these are primarily these for folks who are technologists, are deeply into the tech and passionate about building solutions for their customers. I've only ever known maybe a couple who are really, really strong into the marketing side of things. And those
have folks have quickly realized that that perhaps their calling in the market is to launch a marketopia or an holistic and to provide the services to their peers who aren't so inclined.
Absolutely, and I just think that if we can do whatever we can to try and help our partners out and really kind of help them take their business to the next level, that's really what we're trying to accomplish here at AVG. And you know, it's one thing to just say to a customer, here's a pricing model, or you know, here's a contract, and now you have to go out and figure it out on your own. If we can give them the avenue and the strategies in order to go out and do it, and the mediums to go out and do it, then we really think that we can start putting more money and more recurring revenue into the pockets of our partners.
All right, at the event last week. You know, there was the typical show of hands. How many of you are involved in managed services? See, is the way of the future? Those kinds of things. I was kind of struck that it seemed like everyone's on board. They might question how exactly to get there, but definitely see the value of the model. And perhaps that is to a degree self-selecting because these are folks who showed up for and in AVG sponsored seminar on the subject of managed services. But I'm just curious how the conversation with the channel goes for you guys. Are we past the point where you feel that you're having to sell the actual MSP model to solution providers, or is that still something that you find you're fighting as well?
I think when I speak to my sales team, if it was extremely easy, I think you know, they would be a lot happier, but it's definitely still a challenge. And you know, like I said, there's probably only 25% of the marketplace in North America that has made the transition. Now, there's a lot of companies out there that would consider themselves managed service providers. But if you take a look at, for instance, the upper echelon of what a managed service provider is and what they do and how they deliver services to their customers, mm-hmm. there's a very big differentiation between somebody who's developing true managed services and a company that may be leveraging a bunch of different technologies and trying to deliver services to their clients. And so, you know, we still always take the approach in terms of how we articulate this solution to service providers. We take a consultative approach. We really want to analyze the businesses and see if it's really kind of right for them and if there's a fit in terms of a partnership, because if there isn't, then it's just going to make for an unhappy customer, and that's not what we want. And so really kind of going out and explaining to them exactly, you know, the benefits of how this impacts the business is really something we strive for. And you know, there are some people that have said, you know, years ago, 10 years ago, I said, you know, this is the wave of the future. And there's some businesses that just haven't made that transition yet. I believe that over the next little while, you're going to start seeing a lot more companies make the transition, because, you know, there is what I call an old way of doing business and there's a new way of doing business. And somebody who's still in a break, fix, reactive business model that hasn't made the transition into a managed services model, it's going to be very, very difficult to compete with an MSP just based on the value proposition that they bring to the table.
All right. How much do you feel is enough to be starting to make a difference when you're going from that break, fix, reactive kind of solution provider into managed services or other recurring revenue type of partner models in this cloud world? There are a bunch of new opportunities popping up that way. Clearly not everyone is going to go to 100% recurring, but I remember being at a Cisco partner summit where their channel chief at the time, Edison Perez, was talking about the kind of increase in valuation in particular partners see when their business model is about recurring revenue as opposed to about project-based or break-fix type stuff. I guess I'm just curious, at what point in going from break-fix to full-on 100% managed services and other recurring revenues do partners start seeing the return on investment, the return on value, the increase in their organization's value?
You know, I think if an MSP is doing an analysis on his business and he's just getting into this model, they start seeing benefits immediately from the first customer that they onboard, right? And they start seeing the efficiencies they gain from that client, the additional support that they bring, the value that they bring to the clients, and, you know, service provider brings their value through reporting, right? And that's that first kind of deliverable that a service provider will bring to an end user customer, say, here are all the things that we've done for you, and here's why you haven't experienced any downtime, right? And that's really, at the end of the day, their core value proposition. And so you tend to see it immediately, and, you know, where the industry is kind of at right now is, you know, the full-fledged MSPs, you know, they'll have majority of 100% of their customers on monthly recurring revenue contracts. And they will not touch, for instance, break-fix customers because it just costs them too much money to support, right? Especially if they're leveraging a strong remote monitoring and management platform that has strong monitoring and automation features into it. It just doesn't make sense to continue supporting somebody where you have to go out and roll out a truck and go on site. And so when we tend to look at these models, businesses are trying to convert as many of those customers as quickly as possible. Now, it's not always easy, right? A lot of the time, service providers will struggle at articulating the value proposition that an end user customer really kind of needs to hear and wants to hear. And so one of the things that, you know, our service providers will be able to do is they'll go do network audits, and they'll leverage our technology to kind of push our software out and do a network audit for instance, for 2 weeks or 30 days in a client's environment to explain to them, here are all the things, here are all the vulnerabilities we saw in your environment. Here are the things that, for instance, we believe maybe through a little small project we can update in your environment and put you on a monthly recurring revenue contract. And so And we're trying to kind of create it and create a program that makes it really easy for our partners to go over and bring a customer on board. And doing network audits, I think, is really a critical feat to an MSP in terms of what they can go show and the value that they can articulate to a customer. That's really important for the business.
All right, great. I wanted to talk a little bit about kind of the changing role and the changing feature set of RMM tools such as your own. Obviously, at the presentation last week, you talked a little bit about sort of integration and modules for VMware and for Office 365. Now, I really get the idea of a VMware as a module in RMM because it's a platform. It's a platform that a lot of MSPs are running and a lot of MSPs customers are running, and therefore that MSPs are managing. When I think of Office 365, though, I think more of an app suite than a platform in that true platform sense. How deep
Sure.
will AVG go, do you think, in terms of including popular apps, management for popular apps in custom modules?
So I think it really depends in terms of what our customer base is looking for. And when I talk about our customer base, I'm talking about our channel, right? And so our MSPs. And it's really about ensuring that we're staying on top of what we call new technologies that impact their business and how important they are. So you may refer to 365 as an application. I really refer to it as a platform, right? And just like, for instance, like VMware, because we're starting to see more and more customers, and when I say customers, the end user customer, that are really kind of going to the service provider and start inquiring about this. Hey, does it make sense to maybe kind of move our business into the cloud? And, you know, how would you guys support me? And I think it's very important that the service provider remains relevant in that conversation. And that's why we came out with this. Is it wasn't so much that we thought it was a great application, which we do, but it was really kind of hearing back from our partner base that was saying, hey, listen, what do we need to do in order to continue being able to support our customers? Because, you know, we want to ensure that we're managing all the critical devices on a client's network, right? And if everything's moving into a cloud and something that we're not managing anymore, it's a piece of our revenue that we're losing. And so by coming out with this and taking a look at the industry and what's important to our base, and making sure that they remain relevant, those are the types of things that we're kind of looking at in terms of that we continue developing in our product feature sets, in our product roadmap, and looking, you know, 1 or 2, 3 years ahead in terms of what's coming down the pipe and what do we think are important as well.
All right. And I was struck last week in the conversation about Office 365. The number of partners in attendance who talked about 365 as not only something that was vital to be behind because of popularity, because of customer demand, because of not wanting to give up part of the customer infrastructure to any other party, but also as you know, a key bit of profitability for them. certainly that's an area that was criticized or concerning for solution providers in the early days of Office 365. They've come a long way with that, that's for sure.
Absolutely, right? And when you take a look at it in terms of, you know, when a service provider wants to look after the customer, you want to be able to say, hey, listen, we can look after that. Because at the end of the day, a small business, even the fact that they want to go into the cloud, they still need somebody to set it up for them, configure it, and do all the different things. And if you can integrate that with your RMM offering mm-hmm. and offer an extremely valuable solution to the end user customers, that just kind of, as a service provider, ties you in so strongly with your customer.
Thinking a little bit about the future of kind of the offering and the managed services set. You talked a little about a secure single sign-on offering that you guys are bringing to market through your MSPs, and you talked a little bit at the event about how you saw that area, which has been hot in the enterprise market, kind of coming into the channel. Aside from kind of the products to do it now becoming available to solution providers, what's driving that opportunity in the channel and in the channel's customer base?
I think when you take a look at mobility today and you think about security of all the mobility products and AVG being a security company, I think it's something that we just want to ensure that we help our base really kind of ensure that they're bringing the right type of value to their customers. And over the years, you know, different RMM vendors, we came out with mobile device management, and I just don't think that anybody really kind of either understood the space and the importance of managing clients' devices, but the technologies that were created were really more built around monitoring those devices. And, you know, let's be honest, I don't think that there's as much value in terms of monitoring a device as there is as managing a device. And by coming out with our new secure sign-on solution, it's not only, for instance, to be able to manage applications, where I think that's the value for the service provider is in terms of managing secure applications, in terms of managing approvals on those applications, but also having the secure sign-on aspect. So being able to take, for instance, up to 2,300 applications through one secure sign-on without having to basically utilize a number of different types of what we call insecure passwords for all these different applications, which leads to vulnerabilities and businesses being impacted. We really kind of felt that this was a perfect extension for a service provider to really kind of go out and not only say, hey, listen, we're going to manage devices, but the whole entire industry is moving to a per-user cost. And, you know, laptops, tablets, and phones just really kind of become part of that whole entire being of that person. And that's really kind of really what we want to try and do is just make sure that we're securing not only businesses, but we're also securing the people in those devices as well.
All right. Brilliant. Kind of wrapped up the questions and thoughts I had coming into this. Anything else you want to throw in there? Any parting shots for the Canadian channel and MSP communities?
No, I think that like we're starting to see a lot of uptake in North America and also in Canada as well. I'm sitting here in beautiful Ottawa, Canada right now speaking to you, and I just think that when we take a look at the industry and the marketplace, we're starting to see some really strong geos really kind of pop up out of Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa. Some really mature marketplaces right now, and it seems like today, you know, the service providers really kind of know what they're looking for. So we'd love to have a conversation with anybody that wants to take a look at AVG.
Perfect. Marco, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, there you have it. Another edition of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast just about in the books. I'd like to thank Judy and Marco for joining us and sharing their thoughts. I'd like to thank all of our sponsors, of course, for continuing to make all of this possible. And, of course, I'd like to thank you for listening in, because it wouldn't be much of a show without you now, would it? As we head into summer, things usually get a little bit quiet in this industry, but we've got some great stuff coming in the days and weeks to come, so be sure to keep visiting channelbuzz.ca for your daily Canadian IT solution provider community news fix. And we'll be back real soon with another great edition of the podcast. But until then, I'm Robert Duck for channelbuzz.ca, and I'll see you around the channel.